You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon introducing you to this week's edition of People of Note. Something extremely exciting is happening in the opera world here in Cape Town. Opera UCT, that's the UCT Opera School's performance company, will present fully staged performances of Donizetti's lost opera, Dalinda, at the Baxter Theatre in September. This is the first time in history that this opera will be performed in full. And although Dalinda was given a concert presentation by the Berlin Opernkulpe at the Concerthaus in Berlin in May last year, the Opera UCT production, under the baton of its director Jeremy Silver, makes the first full-scale performance and therefore a significant milestone in the operatic world. And Jeremy, who is globally recognized for conducting lesser-known Donizetti masterpieces, was selected by Ambra Sorrentino of Opera CoPro to bring the full masterpiece to life, which seems to me, Jeremy, to be an extraordinary compliment to you, but also what a story. Jeremy Silver, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
I'd love to know how this came about. Tell me a little bit about the history of Dalinda and how you've become involved and how South Africa is doing the actual world premiere.
It's exciting, isn't
it? It's hugely exciting.
The piece itself was written in the 1830s. Donizetti and all the composers around Italy at the time were always subject to the local censors.
Mm.
Obviously, Italy was not a full country, so, you know, lots of principalities and so forth around the, what we now call Italy. He had written a piece called Lucrezia Borgia about the infamous Italian poisoner.
Yes, indeed.
In fact, which had happened, it had gone on in Milan, and he wanted to put it on in Naples, where he was. And the censors said, absolutely no way. We think this plot is immoral. We can't have all this poisoning and murdering on stage. And so, I mean, this was not an unusual thing. So he went about trying to revise it, trying to get it past the censors, as they usually did. And they were intransigent. So eventually he thought, how am I going to save some of this music, maybe, and repurpose it? Mm-hmm. And so that's when he wrote Dalinda.
Okay, so he saved, he did, had already written some music that yes. they were intransigent about.
Absolutely. So that was the Lucrezia Borgia.
Oh, that was Lucrezia.
That was Lucrezia,
okay.
You see.
Okay.
So then, in an attempt to save some of that and maybe see a way forward for some of the music he'd written, he and his librettist found a completely different libretto and different scenario, but with many of the same sort of relationships between characters, and, you know, so that some of the music could be repurposed.
Mm-hmm.
Dalinda came into being with a completely new libretto, therefore, and with some of the music of Lucrezia Borgia repurposed, and with a lot of new music also written for it, particularly in the second and third acts. And he thought this was going to be sure, because it was not set in Italy. It was set in the Middle East during the Crusades. He thought there would be no objection. Sadly, he was wrong. The censors said no again.
Goodness me.
And I think he got a bit fed up, and he was very international as a composer. He was having commissions from Paris. It wasn't going to be long before he was off in Vienna, and he basically left Italy and went to Paris. And in the process, the manuscripts got lost. They got divided up, I think, and lost. Mm. And so Dalinda, if anybody's known anything about it at all, it's been a footnote in history books.
Wow.
Until about 5 years ago, an academic discovered lots of the fragments all over libraries and basements in Italy, recognized them for what they were, and realized that she had enough material to put together a critical edition of the piece as he intended it. Ricordi, the great Italian publisher, has published it as a proper critical edition, as they do now with all the pieces, and it was ready to go. And the interesting thing about, you mentioned the lady Ambra Sorrentino, she runs something called Opera CoPro. It's sort of split between Italy and the UK. It is not an opera company, but it facilitates collaborations between different opera companies. And she's set to finding people who might be able to. So basically, first of all, she got the rights to this thing for 3 years. And then she started to look for people who might be interested to put it on all over the world. The Berlin performance last year was simply a concert staging, so not a dramatic staging at all.
No scenery, no costumes.
No.
Purely a concert version.
Absolutely. Yeah. And various people around the world were interested in putting it on. She called me because in my previous guise as a freelance conductor in London, she was my agent.
Oh, well, how convenient.
Or she worked at my agency, which is what I should say. And I had conducted two newly discovered, or fairly newly discovered, Donizetti, I think, complete masterpieces that were not particularly known, to miraculously great critical acclaim in London, which was very lovely. And I think she realized I might be interested.
Had you heard about this opera before, or had you heard about what was going on?
No, I didn't know
anything
about it.
Until she contacted you.
She contacted me.
And told you the story.
Absolutely. I knew nothing. So I was immediately interested. I firmly believe that Donizetti is a far better composer than many people believe, of which maybe we can talk later.
Yes.
And so I showed interest and thought, I wonder whether we could do it at Opera UCT, and obviously already all the calculations and logistics are going on in my mind. Never once did I think we would be the first. I thought we would be maybe the second or third. The idea is that there is a production that will then do the rounds, as it were. Mm-hmm. But by a weird quirk of fate, we have become the very first. We will go down in the history books as being the first.
Congratulations,
people.
What a thing.
It's lovely.
And this is the Opera UCT.
Yes.
When you say we, you're talking about Opera UCT.
Absolutely. So, yes, Opera UCT is, as you said, the sort of public performing arm of what would otherwise be called the Opera School at UCT.
At UCT, of which you are the director.
I am, yeah. And we now, for the last 2 years, have been putting on, well, this is our third year, have been putting on productions in our own right, which was never really part of the history. Mm-hmm. I mean, well, not part of the recent history. Actually, from the 1920s, the only opera that was put on in Cape Town came out of UCT. It was a performing company for many years. But then, I guess, with the Arts Councils in the 50s and so forth, you know, the 60s, it then shared that with what was obviously being produced at Artscape, and then with Cape
that's
Town.
That's Opera, Cape Town. Cape Town Opera.
Well, Cape Town
right,
Opera, yes. Obviously is 25 years old this year.
That's
so,
right.
I mean, we're really talking about this century. And this century, basically, Cape Town Opera and the Opera School at UCT have collaborated every year on two productions. It's been a wonderfully beneficial collaboration on both sides for what both parties can bring to it. But we find ourselves now in a slightly different landscape where Cape Town Opera are looking at different approaches to their work. We're looking at keeping top professional level work for our young singers because, one, that's what their predecessors all had, and two, that's what any top young singer would expect if they were in London or Berlin or New York. So we jumped at becoming a performance company in our own right, and we do everything, you know, with professional creative input.
Gosh, it's very good. I didn't realize that because I know very well of the collaborations and things, but it's great that Opera UCT now thinks of itself as a performing company on its own without sort of hanging on to the, I want to say, apron strings of Cape Town Opera, which you never did anyway, but still, maybe a perception, but that doesn't exist.
Maybe there was a perception. It was always beneficial on both sides. Mm-hmm. And it's not that we don't collaborate now, but it's not formulaic in that sense of we will definitely do two productions
right,
a year.
Right.
We come up with different projects.
I think it's great that you like this one. I want to ask you a considerable more about Linda, the size, the cast, all that sort of thing. But I see we've got Donizetti as your first choice of music from Maria Stuarda.
Yes.
What have you chosen this for?
It's a fantastic, rousing, I mean, I don't want to say chorus because it starts off as a solo number of Mary Stuart herself, and the thing grows in a wonderfully uplifting way. It's not bombastic. It's a really uplifting, long-range piece of musical structure, which is incredibly expressive. And I've chosen this and a later piece of Donizetti to really draw attention to the fact that his music was not, as I think sometimes gets characterized, sort of Italian band music with the odd high note for singers. It's really a lot more than that.
I know people do think that.
They do, and I very much on a mission to show that his music
because
is not that.
Am I right in saying that for many people, he's not on the same level as Verdi or Puccini, for example?
I think that has been thought for some time, and what we're discovering as we look at pieces of Donizetti that were forgotten for a long time is that a lot of the things that we have attributed to Verdi's sort of innovations actually were not. They were already in the late 1830s and 1840s things that Donizetti was experimenting with. And this piece, Dalinda, in any case, is no doubt a model for pieces like Rigoletto, and even has the sort of liftoff of a Trovatore about it at times.
My goodness. Which is extraordinary. Okay, but this, what we're going to hear now is from Maria Stuarda,
this just beautiful ensemble.
Music by Donizetti from the opera Maria Stuarda. You heard Editor Gruber over there with the Munich Radio Orchestra and Bavarian Radio Chorus conducted by Giuseppe Patane. And it was the first choice of my guest, the conductor Jeremy Silver, who's the director of Opera UCT. And we're talking about this extraordinary, I don't know whether to call it a coincidence or not, but that Opera UCT has been given the honor of presenting the world premiere of a recently discovered, as you heard, Donizetti opera, Dalinda. So I want to ask you, Jeremy, what you are very enthusiastic about this opera, I can tell. I can tell, Jeremy, you're incredibly enthusiastic about this opera. And, I mean, no one knows it, so it's quite a thing. Is it, I'm trying to find out what to expect, is it like Lucia? I know you mentioned earlier Rigoletto. Is it a dramatic big piece?
Yes, it is. I mean, it's, I guess stylistically, it's still closer to Lucia than Rigoletto. It's just, I think Verdi used certain elements of it as a sort of model. But it is, it, it's it manages to have very, very big dramatic sections and a huge amount of very, very tender and personal music. And I think that's something, anyhow, that Verdi picked up. So many of his pieces later on are about the conflict between public and private.
Very much so, yes.
And this piece is the same. Dalinda is the wife of and daughter of a political leader in the Middle East, and a strong political leader of her in her own right, who is negotiating with troops from enemy forces and so forth, but at the same time she has a long-lost son who she really wishes she could reconnect with, realizes that he has arrived and can't really let anybody know, and it's to do with how she negotiates her private story with her public story, and how he does as well, because he doesn't know for much of the opera that this is his mother.
Oh, goodness me.
Because the stakes are too high,
yeah,
I think,
course,
you know, in a political way, but also in a personal way. What if he rejects her? So she's petrified to tell him. Mm-hmm. And it just goes, it investigates all those very real emotions. I mean, I don't think one looks at this and thinks, well, it's nearly 200 years old. One thinks, yes, I relate to this.
Mm-hmm. And the cast size, is it a typically traditional large cast with a chorus?
There is chorus. Most of the singing chorus is a male chorus, I guess, because of the military
nature
of it, even though there are, certainly in the production, female chorus added to that. And there is also small sections of female singing chorus too. There are four really main big principal roles, and another six or so roles, so it's actually quite large from that point of view, mm-hmm. which are very recognizable characters, and they all sing, but they're slightly smaller roles than the four big ones. So it's actually quite large.
So Dalinda is the lead soprano, basically.
Yes, yes.
The sort of Lucia of the
she
opera.
She is, yes.
And the orchestration, you've sort of implied that Donizetti is underrated mm-hmm. with his orchestration, and so is this orchestra typical of Donizetti, what we might have heard, for example, in the drama of Lucia?
Mm-hmm. Very much so. I think his orchestration was always interesting. It's a very similar orchestral size to Lucia and a very similar use of the orchestra. But there are ways of really bringing out color and bringing out emotion in these things, which I think is sometimes lost. I get the impression that sometimes Donizetti opera particularly is vocal lines with, you know, we sit there and wait for the next high note, and then we're a bit
and a rumpty tum from
and the rumpty tum from the orchestra, and it's really not like that at all. And I my view is that if we treat it like that, it does sound like second rate music, which is why I come across so many musicians who say, "Oh, Donizetti, I don't think so." My absolute conviction is that if you play this music with the same respect and approach that one does other music of the 1830s, Schubert, Schumann, Chopin, it lifts off the page in a completely different way, and it's highly expressive and beautiful music.
That's a very interesting analogy you've made there. Schumann, Chopin, Schubert. Mm-hmm. In a sense that you're now saying that Donizetti's orchestration mm-hmm. is really quite rich. If it's brought up, and there a lot is to do with the conductor, may I say.
I guess so.
You're going to have to make sure this works.
I'm going to have to try, aren't I? It's orchestration, it's harmony, it's melody, and it's structure. It's mm-hmm. all those things. I mean, it's all the elements of music. But I really think that these pieces are far richer and far more representative of the early 19th century than maybe we have always thought.
It's interesting, and I think you're quite right. People kind of look down on things like that, and there's mm-hmm. no reason. Therefore, we need someone as enthusiastic as you to make us sit up and listen, which I presume will happen.
I hope so.
Is the role of Dalinda, once again, I'm thinking of Lucia, rightly mm-hmm. or wrongly, one of those sort of real coloratura roles?
Rather like many of those roles, it's a good mixture. So yes, there's quite a lot of, it requires a soprano who's got great agility and can do the passage work, but also who is able to sing beautiful long lines. What it doesn't have, before anybody comes with the expectation, is a long, 10-minute long cadenza with flute. But then let's face it, nor did Donizetti's Lucia. That is a tradition that came way after his death.
And yes.
Sort of, I get a little bit worried about people who insist on Donizetti tradition, because most of the tradition they're talking about was simply bad habit from much later on. Mm-hmm. I think going back to the sources is a far more interesting way of releasing these pieces.
And with a piece like this, I mean, you are going back to the source because no one else has done it. So you've had the advantage of mm-hmm. working with a score without it having been fiddled or edited.
Absolutely. But with, I suppose, quite a lot of knowledge of his other works and having, as I say, conducted two lesser-known pieces in the past, which I thought were absolutely fantastic.
Can you remember the names of those?
I can. L'Assedio di Calais, which is the Siege of Calais, was one. And another one with a very long title, but it's very interesting. Il Furioso all'Isola di San Domingo. The Madman on the Island of, what do we call it, Saint Domingo? Santa Domenica.
So Domenica.
Yeah. So it's actually a Donizetti opera set on a Caribbean island.
I have to say I've not heard of either of them.
Both have been now recorded by Opera Rara in the UK, which they're the sort of big bel canto specialists, and have odd productions around the place. But I did them in the UK several years apart to people's great amazement that these pieces were so good and yet unknown.
This next piece that you've chosen, as we take another piece of music, Jeremy, the Prelude to Don Sebastiano, that's also something I've not heard of, but presumably that's better known.
It's certainly been around a little bit more than the ones we're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's Donizetti's very last completed opera. And actually the reason I've included this is really to give an idea to people that his musical language was much wider than we think it was. This is just a section from the Prelude. But to my mind, it's got reminiscences or premonitions, I suppose, of Mahler. It's sort of quite extraordinary. And you think, well, if Donizetti was able to do that, should we look at his other music a little bit more closely?
Okay. I see where we're going with this. Okay, here's the overture, Don Sebastiano.
Signorina mi dice d'onorà del fatto il suo Rodolfo.
That's the prelude to the opera Don Sebastiano by Donizetti. And we heard the Symphony Orchestra of Aachen, conducted by Elio Boncompagni. We haven't done lots of Italian, Jeremy. Jeremy Silva is my guest. He's the director of Opera UCT and the conductor of the world premiere, very important, of a recently discovered Donizetti opera called Dalinda, which opens on the 4th of September. So is it here at Artscape, that opera?
It's at the Baxter.
Oh, it's at the Baxter, okay. Yes. Which also does very well for opera, doesn't it, acoustically?
Very well.
I remember the first time I went to an opera at the Baxter, I thought, how's this going to be acoustically? And it works remarkably well. Anyway, so we were talking about Delinda and Donizetti and your passion, it seems to me, to get Donizetti better known. But am I right in saying that you, in your career of many vast things you've done, you are something of a Donizetti expert, aren't you?
I mean, I never think of myself
don't
in such
shy
terms.
Don't be shy now, yes.
I mean, I guess a lot of Donizetti came my way. I have a special soft spot for a piece like L'Elisir d'Amore because it was the first opera I ever conducted.
But it's such a, I mean, isn't that a way to get into Donizetti?
Yes.
If it's conducted properly.
Aha. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I love the piece. I always have done. And, I mean, I've done many productions of Lucia and Anna Bolena and, I mean, there are plenty more. I'm just trying to think through Don Pasquale. And as I say, the two lesser known ones. And what I'm amazed at is the fact that for various reasons through the 19th century, when I guess people were more interested in the music that was being written contemporarily, many of the works of Donizetti sort of got left behind. Very few actually had a long performing history. And the ones we're discovering now, and I mean, it's not just the ones that I'm involved with, there are plenty more. We're discovering a really top class and interesting pieces, and they seem to speak to our age maybe in a way that they wouldn't have spoken to the 1920s. I don't know.
Isn't that interesting? Do you mean musically or text-wise?
Musically and dramatically. I think it's both.
All right. Yeah. Here's a little spanner in the works. Where does Rossini fit in regarding Donizetti? Were they mutually influential to each other?
I mean, Rossini was writing the majority of his operatic music before Donizetti, even though he lived, you know, a very long life. I think in some ways, so obviously Donizetti inherited that tradition of writing, but he really wanted to make things a little bit more emotionally real. He wanted to develop the musical language and develop the drama. Drama was very important to him. I think that's another thing that has got in our way a little bit. People have tended to think, oh, well, the stories are a bit silly and, you know, and then there's all this rum-ti-tum music. Actually, the stories were really important to people. And every time they did a new production of a Donizetti opera in his lifetime in a different city, they would carefully reprint a libretto for the public. They wouldn't just reprint what they did before. I have many copies of these, and they are newly edited. They're, you know, some of the words are different. They're newly punctuated, newly. In other words, they took a huge amount of care over the drama. And this is something I think that also got lost a little bit. If you simply listen to it as notes, you miss what a performer brings to a role. And I think that's what the 19th century was all about. Performers were equal partners in operatic creation.
You're giving me lots of food for thought here, Jeremy. I'm going to have to go and listen to Donizetti much more carefully. I like to think that I know Lucia quite well. And again, that's a great masterpiece of his, as you even said earlier. And yet there's a tenderness, isn't there, and a very humane side to the music of Lucia.
Very much so. I think, I mean, once again, if we're talking public and private, the private music, the quiet music, it can be incredibly beautiful, particularly Lucia's herself. But of course, there's a whole load of other stuff going on in that piece. I mean, to my mind, it's a very modern critique of patriarchy, that she's so restricted and put upon and challenged by her brother and her family situation. That is, to my mind, what the piece is about and what sends her to commit terrible acts later on in the piece. My view is that, you know, you can't just say, oh, well, this is just a mad woman. It's not that at all. Okay. It's a very, very real modern human character in a very modern human predicament.
And I think you sort of indicated earlier that Delinda is a similar figure, really, with family problems and issues and political issues.
Absolutely. So, yes, very much so, that she's trying to reconnect with her son, who she recognizes as somebody who's come back into her area, but there are all sorts of personal and political reasons why she just can't state it outright. So that also makes for very subtle drama.
You mentioned earlier, Jeremy, how it was banned and the people, it was never unbanned, whether it was Lucrece or Delinda. Is that the reason? Was it mostly political? I mean, it's not erotic or anything like that, is it?
No, I don't think that was the reason. I think that was sometimes the reason for censors banning things. But this piece, not particularly. It was more to do, particularly in the Lucrezia scenario, of having a real Italian figure poisoning, lots of murder, lots of sort of immorality in a sense, in that sense, rather than sexual immorality. And they just didn't want to rock the boat politically, of course. There were already calls for Italian reunification. And I think the powers that be had to be very careful to keep things a little bit suppressed.
What sort of year are we talking about when Donizetti would have written the notes for Delinda?
So the piece was finally finished in 1838. Lucrezia, I think, was 1833. So, I mean, he had 4 or 5 years of trying to get that piece on stage before he then turned his attentions to a completely new piece.
And then it was rejected anyway. Yeah. And just one more thing, maybe asking a frivolous question. Does Delinda have something like the sextet, the Lucia sextet?
It doesn't quite have that. I'm trying to get you to sell it. There is another ensemble with, I suppose, similar sort of amount of characters, but it's rather threatening in some ways, which is also interesting.
Well, it is, of course.
As Delinda is being accused of all the murderous acts that she has done in the past. So, yes, I mean, it's also quite extraordinary.
Yeah, it does sound like a fascinating story, by the way, just from what you're hinting at so far. But let's have another piece of music. And we turn away now from Donizetti. And we need to talk about this, Jeremy, is that Opera UCT later in the year are doing a very interesting work by Benjamin Britten, A Turn of the Screw, which is an interesting psychological thriller, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's a ghost story. It's a psychodrama. Absolutely.
A psychodrama, there you go. And you've asked us to feature the tower sequence from that. Tell us what we should listen out for, what we're going to hear.
So the piece is based on a Henry James novella, ghost story, about a young woman who is employed as a governess in a country house to two children. The parents are dead. The uncle, who is their guardian, wants very little to do with them. But when she gets there, she discovers the kids behave a little strangely and that there are ghosts of previous staff there. This is fairly early in the opera, this tower scene, where, yes, she's had a hint that things might not be all right, but she just wanders out into the grounds. She says, "This place is really beautiful. I'm beginning to feel at home," because she's young and inexperienced. And at the very end of it, I mean, depending on exactly where this cuts, you hear the sudden sounds of a celeste, a very high celeste, which is symbolizes one of the ghosts. Oh. So as this beautiful thing finishes, she's suddenly startled.
Okay. And Joan Rogers is playing the part here of the governess.
Absolutely.
With the Mahler Chamber Orchestra, conducted by Daniel Harding.
Heard a far off cry in the night, and I
An excerpt from, well, I think I can say an extraordinary opera by Benjamin Britten, The Turn of the Screw. That was the scene known as The Tower with Joan Rogers there and the Mahler Chamber Orchestra conducted by Daniel Harding. It was another choice of my guest, the director of Opera UCT, Jeremy Silver. And although we've been talking about this exciting production of Dalinda, The Turn of the Screw is something to do. I mean, that's quite a challenge for the singers, isn't it? Because it's as we said, it's a sort of a thriller, psychological thriller.
Absolutely. No, it is. So we're putting this on at the end of November, also at the Baxter. Yeah, it's a challenge in the sense that it's a slightly less familiar musical language, particularly here. And, yeah, I guess sort of a subject matter that we're not necessarily used to in earlier Italian opera, for example.
No, not at all.
So they really have to, yes, to inhabit a different world. It's in English, though. That helps them a little bit.
I believe that, and we need to be careful here because I'm not an expert. I know, I mean, harmonically, it's apparently very interesting because Benjamin Britten really turns up the tension, creating quite a climax. And so, as you say, it's a different language for people, for singers to learn, but important that they do.
Very much so. And I think the operas of Benjamin Britten, in fact, all the music of Benjamin Britten, is really expressive, really direct. I think he had the ability to encapsulate a feeling or a thought or an idea in very few notes and to develop it. It's a genius that I don't come across with all composers.
Well, don't they say about Britten that he's the first composer since Purcell to use language with music so incredibly effectively?
I think that's right. Absolutely. Just such a wonderful musician. I always, when I started in the profession, I missed Britten by about 10 years. But obviously a lot of my older colleagues had worked with him regularly, and I mean, they were all Ben this and Ben that. And they loved him and they revered him, and I really wished I'd been around to see him.
And worked with him, or at least seen him working. Jeremy, you quoted a saying, as artists, we have never shied away from reality and the relevance of opera, even in a modern world, and its ability to tell the human story in a way that is non-threatening to the audiences, yet allows the storyteller to explore sometimes very hidden prejudices and emotions in a legitimate fashion. So that's quite an interesting thought, and it certainly sounds as though that applies to Dalinda and also to The Turn of the Screw.
Very much so. I think we must accept that opera is drama. It's drama with this incredible heightened expression of music. Mm-hmm. But it is not just the noise it makes, as it were. It is as dramatically interesting and cogent as any spoken theatre. And as such, obviously, is always going to be investigating matters that concern human beings, whether they be personal or public or whatever. And I love the idea that our audiences will come and really get caught up in characters and story and the whole sort of vibrant musical atmosphere that surrounds them, because I think that really is a very special means of expression.
Yes, because I was just thinking very often, now you may well agree with me, you may not, very often people, even people who like opera, are put off by sets and productions these days and directors trying possibly to get a bigger audience. So I'm wondering, how are you going to present Dalinda in its typical period, or are you going to make it sort of super atomic in an atomic wasteland?
You'll be happy to hear neither of those two things.
Good.
I'm not a huge fan of setting stuff centuries and centuries ago, simply because I don't think the characters on stage then are incredibly vibrant and meaningful to an audience. On the other hand, I'm not suggesting that we, you know, set it in a subway somewhere. It's not that either. But either take it out of a period context and maybe hint at it, or just place it somewhere where the story can still make sense, but the people seem recognizable, I guess, to an audience. That to me is quite important. Not everybody agrees with me either on that, but I can't imagine seeing A Marriage of Figaro set in the 18th century, and that's so distancing for a piece which I find so contemporary.
Yes. You know, there was one set in Trump Tower some years ago.
I did know that.
It's a bit bizarre now in retrospect. But now, with this production of Dalinda, what sort of set is it? And you've got international set designers as well as local, haven't you?
We've used a wonderful local set designer. We have an international director. We have a director who's come from Italy.
He's coming out here to direct.
He's here already. We're already working. And he and a Bulgarian lady have been designing costumes between them. But our set design is the wonderful Michael Mitchell.
Who's done so many things.
And I think, one, it's going to look fantastic. But two, to have a set designer who really knows the theatre and really knows the scene here is incredibly useful to us. I think to go international on those things, one does at one's peril.
So to go international, is this production that you're doing the one that is going to go international?
Absolutely.
The same sets, the same costumes, just yes. with obviously different singers. Are you going to travel the world or are you sticking with Cape Town?
At the moment, that's a sort of open question. And if a theatre has their own conductor they really want to use, then that's fine. But it's been suggested to me I might maybe do some of them. But I'm not entirely sure yet.
The eyes of the opera world will surely be on Cape Town.
Absolutely.
When this opens on the 4th of September this week. So it must be, I wonder if local or international critics will come by and watch it.
I think there are some who are talking about coming, which is absolutely fantastic. No, absolutely, the opera world is looking. I have to say, the opera world is watching us at Opera UCT anyhow all year round because of the fantastic singers that are in our midst.
Yes.
So they're always interested to find out who's coming up next and who's going to go to which theatre.
Which is happening to our singers.
Very much so. Yes. We have people sending them off to fantastic placements every year, and they end up with wonderful careers.
And you've got wonderful teachers. Look at Virginia Davids, whose main success is Pretty Inde being one of them.
Absolutely. Virginia has actually now retired, but yes, we have great teachers, great coaches, great people doing drama, people doing language, people doing all sorts of stuff. It's a real village that makes that opera singer.
And is it a happy village?
It is, of course, a happy village.
That you're in charge of, Jeremy. And are you getting new people in each year?
Yes.
Enthusiastic people coming to learn to sing?
It is unbelievable, the talent in this country. Young talent, some of it very much on a journey already towards opera. Others who come from community choirs and in outlying areas where coming to Cape Town already feels like an extraordinary sort of...
Almost like going overseas.
Going to New York or something. But what we can confidently say, if they have a natural vocal innate ability and if we can perceive a level of hunger and intelligence there, we can turn them around and give them careers. Internationally, I would say that what we're doing is one of the steepest vectors for transformation in this country, because they do that. They come often from very, very humble backgrounds. They go abroad. What's the first thing they do with their first paycheck? They build their parents' homes. They educate their cousin. This is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And it's one of our big motivations.
That is so good to hear, Jeremy. And congratulations on being chosen, Opera UCT, for an international premiere, world premiere of a Donizetti opera. And there we need to leave it. Let me just tell you that Dalinda is opening on the 4th of September at the Baxter Theatre. And as you've heard, it's definitely something to go along to see and also to consider Donizetti's music much more carefully, as you've made us realize, Jeremy. But to end, as something of a favorite for both of us, you've asked to hear the Liebestod from Tristan and Isolde by Wagner in the recording with Margaret Price, Carlos Kleiber, the Staatskapelle Dresden. I don't think I need to ask you why you chose this.
It's such extraordinary music. It's an absolute pinnacle. I absolutely love it. I've been involved in Tristan several times in the past. And I'm also very much aware that I think the Wagner conversation needs to be developed here.
Yes.
I think many of us are looking at it. I'm looking very seriously, but I just thought it would just be lovely to hear this now.
Especially after a feast of Donizetti and a touch of Benjamin Britten. So you hear the wonderful Liebestod from that recording with Margaret Price and Carlos Kleiber. My guest has been Jeremy Silver, the director of Opera UCT. Thanks, Jeremy, for a fascinating conversation.
And thank you so much.
FMR.